This is Digital Story Podcast number 951, June 11th, 2024. Today's theme is Apple Intelligence, non-threatening to photographers for now. I'm Derek Story. Unlike our friends at Adobe, Apple isn't targeting the photo shoot with their AI integration into upcoming versions of its OS and photo apps. There are lots of new goodies in the toy box, and many of them will be useful for photo enthusiasts. In today's show, I'll provide an overview from a photographer's perspective and also discuss Adobe's latest controversy. I hope you enjoy the show. So like many of you, I was watching the Apple keynote this morning. I'm recording this on Monday, and I was very curious about their take on AI as it relates to the things that I'm really interested in, primarily photography. For the most part, I have to say that I liked what I saw. There were some things that you go, okay, I wonder how this is going to go as we look up the road a bit. But for the most part, I thought their approach was useful, it was personal, and not too threatening, at least right now. Apple Intelligence is Apple's branding of artificial intelligence into its operating systems and apps. They are aiming to apply this technology in ways to make your life easier and more creative, while at the same time keeping your privacy intact. They're trying to do that balancing act. Now, they're calling it AI for the rest of us. I'm sure we have a number of Seinfeld fans in this audience, and when I heard AI for the rest of us, all I could think of was Festivus for the rest of us. Anyway, you have to watch Seinfeld to know that one. Okay, I'm moving on. To some degree, based on the keynote presentation at WWDC, I think the marketing is lining up with the real-world application. Apple Intelligence powers new writing tools to put your written communications in the best light possible. You can create new Pixar-like images with Genmoji. You can generate illustrations from scratch with Image Playground. And you can create professional-looking movies easily that are based on the pictures that you have captured and are stored in your photos library. Most of those generated images in the keynote, they were more illustrative rather than photographic. And I think this is important because what is Apple trying to do with its image-based AI tools? And I think what they're trying to do is give us ways to create emojis, to illustrate articles, notes, texts, term papers, all that kind of stuff. I don't think they're as interested, at least Apple themselves, are as interested in photorealistic creations from text-based prompts. We'll see. I think most of the generated images in the keynote, they were illustrative rather than photographic. I didn't see anything that resembled the output from my digital camera, but according to the documentation, Image Playground does have the ability to transform sketches into polished photographs. And I can't see this happening on device, as Apple prefers most of this work to happen. So the user would have to venture out into the cloud for this capacity. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But generally speaking, if you want to create a custom emoji for a text message or an illustration for a school paper, Apple Intelligence appears to be able to do a nice job. When applied to the Photos app, the technology will further improve search capabilities and provide better organization options. I've been talking about AI search in the sense of object recognition search in photos for quite some time. And Apple doesn't tout the improvements. I mean, they keep improving it, but we never really hear much about it. We did hear some about it today because now Photos is able to do more sophisticated object related searches. So you can say like the name of a person, And they used the example that had stars on her face. It was something like for a birthday party or something. And so now the application can recognize stars on a person's face, and then they can take the information of who that person is, and they can find those images. So it's getting better. It has been decent and sometimes even good up until this point and currently, but I really feel like this is going to be a big leap forward for object recognition search in photos. And that's so important. If it works really well, which I think it will, and which I hope it will, then that eliminates the whole notion of having to fool around with keywords and things like that. Because we have all this information. If you're shooting with an iPhone, for example, we have all this information that the device is already capturing. It knows where you are. It knows what time of day it is. It knows all sorts of stuff. So it has that information, and then combine it with AI-powered object recognition that's really good. Keywording now seems like it could be something of the past. And I mean, that would be fine with me. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Now, in terms of getting into the tools for photos, they're not really doing a whole lot. We're getting one new tool that I'm aware of, and it's called Cleanup. And it's very nifty. It's like what we see on commercials right now for like the Google phone and so forth, where there's an object there you don't like and you just brush over it. And then, you know, it's cleaned up. The object goes away and it's replaced with the background that is relevant to where the object was. So we're getting that, which is really nice to have in photos. And we'll have that in photos on the Mac and the iPad and the iPhone, as long as you have, as long as you have new enough devices. And I'll also get to that in a second. But generally speaking, the way Apple Intelligence is going to be applied to our photography app is going to be more for search. It's going to be more for organization. We can pull groups of photos together easier and in a way that we couldn't before. We can make movies where we just say, we want a movie that includes this activity with these people. And the application will find the best examples of that and then put them together in a logical sequence. You know, that's really cool. And then, of course, add music transitions and all that good stuff. It's going to be a nice helper, especially for mundane things like searching for photos or building movies, things like that, that are actually kind of boring for the most part. But we don't see a lot of generative stuff in there. I'm going to put an asterisk there on that. Let's keep moving. So to tap this technology, you'll need an iPhone 15 Pro or Pro Max. And then, of course, the iPhone 16. I'm sure probably all models of the 16, but for sure the Pro. And that'll come out about the same time that the software comes out. So it'll be either iPhone 15 or 16 Pros. A Mac with Apple Silicon. Or an M-powered iPad, you know, an iPad that has a M1 chip or M3 chip or whatever. In my opinion, the hardware requirements are steep because Apple's approach is to do as much AI processing on the device as possible. And so it's all local so that you're not going to a server out there somewhere. Now, you will have options to venture out into the cloud as needed. So, for example, if you want something, you want to create something, you're searching for something, whatever, and your device that you're using, let's say an iPhone 15 Pro, can't provide it on device or can't create it on device, then the application or the OS will ask you, is it all right if we go out to a secure cloud to process this information or to get this information? Now, Apple talked a lot about this secure cloud. In other words, it's not just a regular cloud. It's your information won't live there. It's just going there. Only the information that's required to generate what you need will go out. You know, they're trying to make it as secure and private as possible. And you will have the option to approve, you know, your device going out to the cloud to get that and then bringing it back. So that's going to be a whole interesting thing. Running parallel to that is integration with ChatGPT, And that is a partnership that Apple has developed with OpenAI. And that's going to be a whole separate thing. That will be definitely going to the cloud. I can't see that being on device at all. What Apple's trying to do is, you know, have, you know, good hardware standards. In other words, you know, the current stuff, do as much on-device work as possible, and then give you the option to go out to a secure cloud. And then, of course, running parallel to that will be the OpenAI stuff. So that's all going to be interesting to see how it sorts out, but it makes sense to me, and I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to limit vulnerability to servers that are away from your device as much as possible. The unknown with all of this is, you know, what are developers going to want to do with this technology, and what will Apple allow them to put on its platform? Apple's providing an SDK with app intents, APIs, and frameworks to make it easy for developers to integrate system-level features like writing tools and Image Playground into their apps. And this is, I think this is the unknown right now. And also the fascinating part, right? The part that we're really curious about as well. Of particular interest to us is the SDK for Image Playground. Here's what Apple is saying to its developers. I'm just going to read you. This is off the Apple site. Image Playground delivers an easy-to-use experience to create fun, playful images in apps like Messages, Notes, Keynote, Pages, and more. Using the Image Playground API, you can add the same experience to your app and enable your users to quickly create delightful images using context from within your app. And because images are created entirely on device, you don't have to develop or host your own models for your users to enjoy creating new images in your app. And that's end quote there. Now, I think that entirely on device, that's a little gray to me, because I think, yes, you could limit it to entirely on device, but I'm pretty sure they're also going to allow, maybe not immediately, but at some point, to go off device, because you have to for certain functionality. You know, you can't have everything you need for artificial intelligence on hardware device, unless your hardware device is a server farm that you're carrying around in the back of a truck. That part is one of the question marks that I have right now. And I'm not saying question mark, you know, doom and gloom question mark. I'm just saying I'm curious to see how that's going to be handled. I'm fascinated, because if Apple and its developers can find an elegant way to handle this going off device for information and returning it, only sending out the absolute what is needed, having it be anonymous and private, and then not living on those servers, if they can work that out, that's going to be pretty cool and very interesting. I think I'm most interested in the photo world. I mean, there's lots of different apps and developers and all that, but you know, we're focusing right now mainly on imaging and photography. And I'm very curious to see what savvy software companies like Pixelmator is going to do with all this new capability. I can see them right now just going, oh boy, let me add it. Get me that SDK, I'm ready to go. macOS Sequoia and iOS 18 will be released this fall. Betas will be available to all the general Mac community soon, so if you want, you can play around with it. I'm really looking forward to see how this all plays out. And again, I'm positively looking forward. It's not that I don't understand there are vulnerabilities here, there are risks, all that kind of stuff. But hey, we're in an AI world right now anyway. So if someone can do this in a way that I'm a little bit more comfortable with, I'm all for it. And that's why at the moment, I'm going to be cautiously optimistic to see how Apple Intelligence and the developers for the platform, you know, take all this capability and do something really cool with it that we will like and not be nervous about. Adobe revising terms of use to clarify content licensing, AI, and privacy. And this article is on petapixel.com. I have a link to it in the show notes. You can read the whole thing there. I'm going to read you parts of it right now. Now, unless you've been living under a virtual rock, you probably know that Adobe got in a little bit of hot water since our last podcast because they have an updated terms of agreement. And someone actually read it and they found some stuff in there that was very troubling. And then the next thing you know, this whole thing is a big kerfuffle on the web. So we've been waiting to see what Adobe's response would be. And this just broke today. This article just broke. I mean, actually, when I was working on the show notes of the podcast. So let's see what Adobe's going to say about this kerfuffle. The confusion and anger surrounding Adobe Terms of Use update last week caused Adobe to revisit its language and communications at large. Beyond a blog post late last week, Adobe Today published another blog post announcing plans for direct communications with customers and an updated terms of use. Quote, "We recently rolled out a reacceptance of terms of use, which has led to concerns about what these terms are and what they mean to our customers. This has caused us to reflect on the language we use in our terms and the opportunity we have to be clear and to address the concerns raised by the community," Adobe says. Adobe also says that it plans to speak to customers before rolling out changes to its terms of use by June 18. Customers should expect significant clarification regarding content ownership, training generative AI models, usage licenses, and content moderation. The company says that continuing to revise its terms of use is the right thing to do. Revisions in terms of use will focus on numerous key areas, especially those users are most concerned about right now, including how Adobe trains generative AI models, treats user content, and moderates content. Adobe says that while user data is used to help improve some machine learning features, not generative AI tools like Firefly, users can always opt out. While opting out may limit access to specific development programs and product improvement functions, it is an available choice for all users. As for the broader issue of trust and how Adobe has lost it, the company says, quote, "We recognize that trust must be earned. We are grateful for your feedback. We'll be connecting with as many customers in our community this week to discuss our approach and these changes and are determined to be trusted partner for creators in the era ahead. We will work tirelessly to make it so," end quote. And we'll see how that goes. They are definitely going to have to handle these delicate issues more skillfully. You just don't have a pop-up say, hey, if you want to continue this software, if you want to continue using this software, you have to agree to our new terms of use. And oh, by the way, there's a few things in there, in legalese, of course, that sound a bit scary, but we're not going to explain them to you or give you any warning about them whatsoever. So I think that the kerfuffle has had one really good outcome, which is it's getting Adobe to slow down a little bit, talk to its customers a bit more, and then maybe clarify some of the things that they're saying in this terms of use so that we all understand what's going on and can feel a little bit better about when we're using their software, when we're connecting to their cloud services and all that kind of stuff. More to be reported on this story, but right now it looks like we got their attention. Finally, the Nikon Z6 Mark III is coming soon. And this little post is on amateurphotographer.com. I have a link to it in the show notes. Nikon has teased the imminent arrival of a new mirrorless camera, the Nikon Z6 Mark III. Excited? Keep your eyes peeled. The Z6 Mark III will be announced on June 17th. A video teasing the new camera has been released on the Nikon website. The impressive Z6 II was announced back in October 2020 with the Z7 II, which are both among the best Nikon mirrorless cameras. we gave the Z6 Mark II 4.5 out of 5 stars and described it as a solid all-around performer that still has a great deal to offer enthusiast photographers. To give you some idea of what we may be seeing in the new model, let me just tell you what was in the Mark II at a glance. It was $1,597. It had a 24.5 megapixel BSI CMOS full-frame sensor, went from ISO 50 to 200,000, 14 frames per second continuous shooting, 3.69 million dot EVF with a 0.08x magnification, a 3.2 tilting touchscreen, 5-axis in-body stabilization, and 4K 60p video via a firmware update that followed. So that is the Mark II, a $1,600 camera with those specs. So the Mark III could be really something else. I'd tell you right now, and especially if they can keep it around that same price point. More will be revealed next week. June 17th is when the big announcement's going to happen. And I think a lot of Nikon shooters out there will be following this very closely. I have an update for Capture One Pro users. This is really interesting. Alex on Raw, and I interviewed Alex a while back. He develops plugins and styles and things like that for Capture One. And they're really quite lovely. And he does some very nice stuff. Well, he has a new thing out called Next Gen Styles. And I thought today was a good day to talk about it since we're talking about AI and photography and all that good stuff. What Next Gen Styles are, and styles are for Capture One Pro like presets in Lightroom, just to clarify that, adjust the white balance automatically and apply AI color gradings in Capture One. That's what these styles do. I'll read you just a little bit about what this kit has. The Next Gen Styles set includes over 100 styles designed to take full advantage of Capture One's AI capabilities. And there are 10 smart white balance styles to automatically set the natural white balance for your images. There's 20 smart white balance plus image tone styles to adjust the white balance and set classical contrast with a single click. Then there are 60 AI color grading styles to easily apply color correction to the image subject or background. And then there are 30 AI visual accent styles to draw the viewer's attention to the right place in your image. They're super easy to install. I've tested them. Bam, they install right away. They show up right there in your styles palette. So, you know, you just have a whole new category with a whole bunch of new styles. And I say they worked pretty well. They varied from image to image, but styles vary from image to image in terms of their effectiveness and their appeal. But the thing about it, and the thing that Capture One, I think, is good at in general is color. Not only giving you good default color, but also giving you good tools to get the color either really professional or really creative or, you know, really what you want. And so that the whole thing just sort of hangs together with this beautiful palette. And I think Next Gen Styles fits in there really well. Now, I have a link to the product page in the show notes. So you can just click on that link and it'll take you right over there. You can buy the whole set of styles, which is 60, 80, 90, 120 of them. You can buy that for $49.99. I do have a coupon code for Alex on Raw that'll get you 10% off. And I'll have that in the show notes as well. So you can use that. But the really cool thing is that he has a free download of some sample styles that won't cost you anything. And you can get to those on this page as well. Plus, he has some before and afters. He explains all the different styles. He's got people saying how wonderful they are, which is really cool. He's got tutorials here. He's got video tutorials. And then he has the link to download 5 sample styles. So you can do that free of charge and see how they work. No obligation. They don't wear out. None of that kind of stuff. You have them. So a worst case scenario on this for Capture One users is that you come away with 5 free styles to help you get the best color possible out of your images. Alex continues to create new stuff for Capture One users, and we're really happy that he's doing his thing that allows us to do our thing as well. Okay, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I'm going to start out with a newsletter this week. Last week in the newsletter, I really got interested in the new Leica Lux app for the iPhone. They really did a great job with this. It simulates Leica lenses and also Leica color. And plus, the app is really nice to use. It's got this very Leica-like UI. There's a free version of it that gives you the 28mm lens and a bunch of Leica color styles. And then you can subscribe to it and get more lenses and more color styles. I just thought it was a lot of fun. So I wrote about it in the newsletter because I was so captivated by it. And what I've done is, so I'm only using the free version right now. It's a 28mm lens, and then I'm using Leica Natural, I think, for my style. I made my action button for the Leica camera. So now if I want to take a regular picture with the Apple camera, I just long press. If I want to use the Leica camera, I use the action button. And it's just really easy. It can make the choice right on the spot. So anyway, that's what I wrote about in last week's newsletter. And that's the thing. You know, this stuff just like it catches my eye. The podcast's already been recorded. I wanted to share it with our audience. You can get the Nimble newsletter every Thursday for free. You can sign up for it any number of places, everywhere, right? The Digital Story or on thenimblephotographer.com. It's a lot of fun, and I think you'll enjoy it. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that are supporting our community and have their own space on Derek Story Online. And we're adding new Inner Circle members even after the membership drive, which I just think is just really cool. I really appreciate that. And I just love having all these people who have been listening to the podcast for some time now, joining the Inner Circle and having this rush of new photographers and new artists come into the Inner Circle has really made it even more exciting than it was already. I'm really grateful to all of our new members. I'm so happy to have you here. I'm loving your comments and your pictures and your participation. And of course, a big thanks to our members who have been with us from the start. And this thing just keeps growing and feeling better and more exciting all the time. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, nose around a bit, sign up, and then next thing you know, you'll be getting an invite to Derek Story Online, our Inner Circle space there, and that's where we're having all that fun. And I hope you join us in 2024. And finally, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that provide everything that you need for your inkjet printing. It was interesting. One of our Inner Circle members posted on the site. He had taken the printing class, which is based on the knowledge that we get from Red River Paper and from photographers who are great printers, you know. So that course is based on people who really know what they're talking about. And one of the goals of our inkjet printing course is for you to be able to get a good print on the first pass, not have to do 10 test prints, waste a lot of paper, waste a lot of ink. So one of our Inner Circle members, Nelson, talked about how he did that, printed out a couple prints last minute for his camera club meeting, first pass. He said they looked really good, took them to the camera club, got a great response from them, and just was pleased as punch that he was able to do this efficiently and yet still produce beautiful artwork that he could share with others. This is what Red River Paper does for this community. They help us be smarter, more efficient, and print beautiful stuff because knowledge is everything in printing. And once you get it dialed in, it's so beautiful to have that first print come out and look dynamite. That's what Red River Paper can do for you. I'm so thankful to have them as part of our community. You can learn more about them by clicking on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. Take a look at their site. Look at our landing page. Nose around a bit. Get yourself some paper and then make some prints. You'll be thankful. You'll be pleased. And you'll really like the reception that your prints get from other people. Red River Paper also has a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And again, a big thanks to them for sponsoring this show. Right, going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.